Then an army officer climbed out of a truck and told us all to leave the Queen Emma Bridge. He was very stern. He growled, "Don't you know they could shoot a torpedo up here and kill you all?" I looked out toward the sea again. It was blue and peaceful, and a good breeze churned it up, making lines of white caps. White clouds drifted slowly over it. But I couldn't see the usual parade of ships coming toward the harbor, the stubby ones or the massive ones with flags of many nations that steamed slowly up the bay to the Shattagat to load gas and oil. The sea was empty. There was not even a sail on it. We suddenly became frightened and ran home to the Charlus section where we lived. I guess my face was pale when I went into the house because my mother, who was in the kitchen, asked immediately, "Where have you been?" "Punda," I admitted. "I went with Henrik." My mother got very upset. She grabbed my shoulder and shook it. "I told you not to go there, Philip," she said angrily. "We are at war. Don't you understand? We just wanted to see the submarines," I said. My mother closed her eyes and pulled me up against her thin body. She was like that, one minute shaking me, the next holding me. The radio was on, and a voice said that 56 men had died on the lake tankers that were blown up, and that the governor of the Netherlands West Indies had appealed to Washington for help. There was no use in asking Amsterdam. I listened to the sorrowful sound of his voice until my mother's hand switched it to off. Finally, she said, "You'll be safe if you do what we tell you to do. Don't leave the yard again today." She seemed very nervous, but then she was often nervous. My mother was always afraid I'd fall off the seawall or tumble out of a tree or cut myself with a pocket knife. Henrik's mother wasn't that way. She laughed a lot and said, "Boys, boys, boys." Late in the afternoon, my father, whose name was also Philip Enright, returned home from the refinery where he was working on the program to increase production of aviation gas. He'd been up since 2 o'clock, my mother said, and please don't ask him too many questions. They had phoned him that morning to say that the Germans might attempt to shell the refinery and the oil storage tanks, and that he must report to help fight the fires. I had never seen him so tired, and I didn't ask as many questions as I wanted to. Until the past year, my father and I had done a lot of things together, fishing or sailing our small boat, or taking long hikes around Krupp Bay or Serramalle, or just going out into the Conoco, the countryside, together. He knew a lot about trees and fish and birds, but now he always seemed busy. Even on a Sunday, he'd shake his head and say, "I'm sorry, Guy, I have to work." After he had had his pint of cold Dutch ale, he had one every night in the living room after he came home, I asked, "Will they shoot at us tonight?" He looked at me gravely and answered, "I don't know, Philip. They might. I want you and your mother to sleep down here tonight, not on the second floor. I don't think you're in any danger, but it's better to sleep down here." "How many of them are out there?" I thought they might be like schools of fish. Dozens, maybe. I wanted to be able to tell Henrik exactly what my father knew about the submarines. He shook his head. "No one knows, Philip. But there must be 3 of them around the islands. The attacks were in 3 different places."
"They came all the way from Germany?"
He nodded. "Or from bases in France," he said, loading his pipe.
"Why can't we go out and fight them?" I asked.
My father laughed, sadly, and tapped his long forefinger on my chest. "You'd like that, would you? But we have nothing to fight them with, son. We can't go out in motorboats and attack them with rifles." My mother came in from the kitchen to say, "Stop asking so many silly questions, Philip. I told you not to do that." Father looked at her strangely. He had always answered my questions. "He has a right to know. He's involved here, Grace." My mother looked back at him. "Yes, unfortunately," she said. My mother, I knew, had not wanted to come to Curacao in late 1939, but my father had argued that he was needed for the war effort even though the United States was not at war then. Royal Dutch Shell had borrowed him from his American company because he was an expert in refineries and gasoline production. But the moment she saw it, my mother decided she didn't like Curacao, and she often complained about the smell of gas and oil whenever the trade winds died down. It was very different in Virginia,
where my father had been in charge of building a new refinery on the banks of the Elizabeth River. We'd lived in a small white house on an acre of land with many trees. My mother often talked about the house and the trees, about the change of seasons, and the friends she had there. She said it was nice and safe in Virginia. My father would answer quietly, "There's no place nice and safe right now." I remembered the summers with lightning bugs and honeysuckle smells, the cold winters when the fields would all be brown and would crackle under my feet. I didn't remember too much else. I was only 7 when we'd moved to the Caribbean. I guess my mother was homesick for Virginia, where no one talked Dutch, and there was no smell of gas or oil, and there weren't as many black people around. Now, there was a cold silence between my mother and my father. Lately, it had been happening more and more often. She went back into the kitchen. I said to him, "Why can't they use aircraft and bomb the submarines?" He was staring toward the kitchen and didn't hear me. I repeated it. He sighed. "Oh, yes. Same answer, Philip. There are no fighting aircraft down here. To tell you the truth, we don't have any weapons."